You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up, Australia's tradie shortage. The share market has its worst day in almost 7 weeks. And America's big tech battle, that's all next. Hi everyone, it is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 22nd of October. The Australian share market fell 1.7% today. We'll have the details with Jessica Amir from Moomoo in a few moments. But first, to Australia's tradie shortage, where the Housing Industry Association says the nation needs 30% more tradies if the government will meet its target of building 1.2 million homes over the next 5 years. For more, I spoke with HIA senior economist Matt King. Matt, so to what extent is the industry experiencing trade shortages, and what kinds of trades exactly?
So what we saw today is for the September quarter, we saw a deterioration in the skills shortage situation in residential building. And so the HIA Trades Availability Index unfortunately saw a marginal deterioration, just further indication that there's tremendous pressure on sourcing adequate labour to build the homes that we need right now.
What is that shortfall like?
So what we're seeing at the moment is acute shortages across a number of skilled trades. HIA pays particular attention to 12 trade categories. And what we're seeing is varied intensity or severity of shortages across those 12 categories of skilled trades. Where we're seeing the most pressure in sourcing adequate skilled trades is in bricklaying, tiling, and plastering and carpentry. And so those are the top four at the moment, but I can indicate that at the moment what we are seeing is across all 12 categories that we measure robustly, we're seeing acute shortages.
So what does this mean then for the government's plan to build 1.2 million homes over the next 5 years?
The current situation with a shortage of skilled trades means that there's going to be a significant constraint on new home building activity in Australia. The government's obviously set out a target to build 1.2 million homes over the next 5 years, and that is an admirable target, but there are significant headwinds, and one of the key constraints is going to be the availability of skilled trades. Not only are we seeking to set effectively record home building levels over the next 5 years, what we're seeing is stiff competition against a very elevated public sector construction pipeline. And so while we're at a fairly moderate level of new home building activity, and we expect it to really pick up as we progress through this year and into next year, and we see that recovery emerge, which is coming, we will be up against around, at the moment, it's sitting at about $68 billion worth of public sector infrastructure work in the pipeline. And that's not something that we're saying is a negative, but simply we need to be aware that we are going to be competing for essentially the same sort of pool of workers. And in drawing from that same pool of workers, we are going to have shortages of workers, and that's probably going to push up the price of trade subsequently as well.
Yeah, can we talk about how this shortage then is being played out in terms of both cost of labour and cost and time of building a home? Because from my understanding too, one of the big drivers of inflation at the moment is that housing component.
So you're right. There's really two key inputs that drive construction cost escalation. First of all, it's material costs, building material costs, and we've seen rapid escalation over the last, 2 to 4 years, particularly post-pandemic. Certain building materials prices rose as much as 60%, but just as a general kind of indicative cost escalation as far as building materials. Prices went up about 30% on building materials. Now, that's slowed down in recent months, which is really encouraging, but we're not going to see a decline in the prices of those building materials. So that's sort of input number one. Input number two is the skilled labor that goes into the construction of new homes. And some of that labor is actually flexible across different construction sectors. And so that labor will actually move into non-residential building, will move into engineering, construction, et cetera. And so what we're going to see is as the pressure intensifies, the demand for that skilled labor picks up as the new home building market recovers and we compete against this public infrastructure pipeline, likely we're going to have a deterioration of the skilled labor shortage, which is then going to push up the prices on that skilled labor.
And does that follow through to the price of building a new home?
When you see these two inputs both rising together and you have that cost escalation across both inputs, it's simply going to result in the cost of housing increasing. There's just no way of getting around it. We are going to see further increases in the cost of building a new home. And what we're then going to run into is it will act as a constraint on demand as homes get a little bit further out of the reach of those that are renting, that are seeking to get into the home ownership market. But in an encouraging turn of events, what we are seeing right now is a return of market confidence. We are seeing both owner occupiers and investors returning to the market. And so we are starting to see a pickup in some of those leading indicators of future building activity. HIA's new home sales report continues to report incremental increases each quarter in new home sales. We're seeing home lending or housing finance data starting to improve, again, both owner occupiers and investors. And so while there are these significant headwinds, there are clear signs of a return of market confidence, and the demand and felt demand out there in the market is increasing that demand for new homes. So the signs are generally positive going forward, looking at new home building.
And in just wrapping up and back to that shortage in trades, how do we fix it? You mentioned that the sector is in competition, the residential sector is in competition with the government. Is there anything that can be done there? And then obviously the big one, what would you like to see done with migration?
So there are clear policy settings that need to be in place in order for us to adequately source the skilled labour needed for building 1.2 million homes. We need to start here at home. We need to start domestically. We need to look at the degree to which we're encouraging, especially young people, to enter into residential building industry. So that starts in the schools and the universities. And so what HIA is really advocating for is a large-scale campaign that is a partnership between federal government and industry to really promote residential building industry as not just a viable career prospect, but one with an extensive amount of benefits and real strength of career opportunities. So we need that promotional campaign at the Commonwealth level. What we also need to do is we need to give long-term commitment and an expansion for employer subsidies to take on apprentices. At the moment, we only have about 114,000 apprentices in training. We could easily afford to double that in this country. That would be highly beneficial for the new home building industry. It's unlikely that we're going to get that amount of increase in apprenticeships in the next 5 years. However, we need to work at it and we need to do a lot more to attract apprentices and support employers that are taking on apprentices. But thirdly, as you refer to, Ricardo, is what we need to do is we need part of the solution is we need to source this skilled labor from overseas. So we need to streamline those pathways for overseas skills to come into the Australian residential building industry quickly at low cost. And so we need to look at the policy settings in there, such as We need to look at new policies such as a residential contractor skills visa, something like that, that really expedites the delivery of skilled trades from overseas countries into Australia to help support the domestic workforce and get that 1.2 million homes built.
That is Matt King there from the HIA.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
The Australian share market had one of its worst days in almost 7 weeks. The S&P ASX 200 down 1.66%. All 11 sectors finished in the red. Property and consumer stocks doing most of the damage as traders fear US and local interest rates may not fall as fast as initially thought. With more details, here's Jessica Amir, a market analyst at Moomoo.
We're seeing the Aussie share market step down from that record all-time high. It's for a range of reasons, Ricardo. Firstly, the US election, it's just 2 weeks away. Markets, yes, they're positive in an election year, but volatility typically picks up around this time of year, and that's exactly what's happening. But once we know who's going to be leading the free world and we've got election certainty, that's when we typically see cash come back into the market. And the good news is we do have a record of $6.2 trillion in US dollars that is expected to start to come back into markets. But right now, the concern is that whoever wins the US election, they're going to pump the US economy with cash, stimulate the economy, and that's going to cause inflation to pick up. Also, it's probably going to pick up record high debt levels. So that's a concern. But traders locally, Ricardo, they're also coming to terms that the RBA may not even be needing to cut interest rates as well. So that's why the market is also lower today.
Okay. There are a number of significant international factors at play at the moment. You mentioned the US presidential election. We've also got China and the Middle East conflict. Which ones are you keeping a close eye on? And what does it mean for markets over the longer term?
Well, they're all really important factors, but we do have to remember the big picture is markets are forward looking. But right now, volatility and nuances, they're causing ebbs and flows in markets, but it's not all doom and gloom. But for the most part, China, the Middle East, the US presidential election, yes, they are causing the VIX index to spike. And the US dollar, they're back at July highs. That's a concern. But the fact of the matter is markets are forward-looking. Earnings are growing stronger than expected. Plus, we've got China and the US stimulating their economies. The narrative is positive, but there's always a bull market somewhere. If we just have a look at today as an example on the ASX, we saw coal stocks, gold stocks hit new highs overnight in the US, Ricardo, defense stocks hitting new highs, record highs, in fact. If we think about coal, let's just dive into that or pause in that for a second. The coal price significantly is up 15% from September. Why? Well, today China just announced that they're importing a record amount of coal from Australia into China. And this is because China's, as we all know, they're turbocharging their economy. And they've got cash coming out of their pockets after announcing that bazooka record stimulus package. Gold, Ricardo, that hit a record all-time high. That's pushing up gold stocks and ETFs. And with geopolitical tension rising, the concerns about debt levels rising, the gold price is only going to continue to get higher. Of course, remember the averages. Looking back at the last three times the Federal Reserve, the US Central Bank cut interest rates, the gold price rallied 100%. That's on average. So the factors are there supporting more upside in gold. So that's a key consideration.
There's also an interesting battle in the tech space at the moment overseas. What can you tell me?
Well, I've been calling it the tech new age David versus Goliath, Jensen Wong versus Tim Cook battle. So what's happening is Apple and Nvidia, they're almost neck on neck in market valuation size. So to put that into context, that's about $3.6 trillion US. But we all know that the iPhone made Apple the world's biggest company, and it stayed there for a very long time. But now the market's coming to terms that we've got a chip maker, the new kid on the block, that could potentially dethrone Apple. It just needs to gain $71 billion in market cap in US size to do that. Now, what the market's waiting for, Ricardo, is to see earnings growth. Earnings growth drives share price growth. So we're looking for NVIDIA to show that their earnings are growing more than expected. What's that? We're looking for 82.5% revenue growth and for revenue to hit $33 billion. But we won't get those numbers until late next month. More imminently, we've got Apple, Ricardo. They're reporting later this month. The market's expecting their revenue to hit a record $94 billion, and it's only expected to grow by 5%. So if you can remember those numbers and reflect on those, if you see beats in those, then that means that company will likely see its share price appreciate, and that will give you a pretty good indication of who potentially could be the biggest company in the world and stay there for the long term, perhaps.
And very briefly, where do you see the opportunities for investors at the moment?
Well, three key areas: US rate cut beneficiaries, China rate cut beneficiaries, and gold.
That's Jessica Amir there from Moomoo.
This SBS On The Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.